word of warning. The portion of this tale that I'm about to tell is particularly grisly and perfectly gruesome. Children, if you're listening right now, you'd best not let your parents catch you, or they'll likely end up writing me some nasty letters. So as long as we're clear on that point, let's get ready for some true horror. The investigators had recently rescued Elliot's wife and son from some creatures of nightmares.
Did you read anything about, I don't know, Wendigo rituals or whatever the hell?
Do not say that word while we're in this forest.
On their way back to the car, they met a peculiar man named Joseph Albert.
Oh, Joseph Albert. Nice to meet you. And he'll shake your hand very aggressively.
Likewise. Thank you for these things. Hey, champ, you hungry?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll hold out his hands and then start greedily eating.
Not too fast. You'll choke.
He's really greedily eating. Like, he's got his full face in his hands, and he's, like a dog, almost.
Hey, slow down there, kiddo.
Oh, sorry, Dad. Just really hungry.
And they began piecing together some disturbing details.
Don't mention that you saw anyone here. That'd be swell.
Absolutely. I won't say nothing, Dart, or Ronnie, or Elliot. Our secret.
All right. God bless you, Joseph. We're gonna take off.
Oh, God bless you.
What was with Mr. Albert? That was a character, huh? What a kook.
Yeah, that was strange.
Dr. Greenbank, did you arrive at the same conclusion that I did? That Wagoner probably poisoned his parents?
Yes.
And very likely is the one to do with what you guys found in the basement?
I came to the conclusion about the poisoning, but I find it hard to believe that someone who has done enough research into what those rituals mean would be willing to do them. Humans have nothing to gain from the presence of those things.
Once they had made it back to Ronnie's house, and Elliot's wife Nora began recounting the kidnapping, Dr. Greenbank was able to shed some light on the mysterious captors.
The story goes that when someone is about to starve to death and they resort to cannibalism, they turn into one of those. And there's no saving them.
And now we return to Ronnie's house as Dart and Dr. Greenbank are about to set off for the Four Seasons Resort to collect the things they left behind in their rooms. I'm sure nothing bad will happen. Nothing horrific and heinous ever happens in the Devil's Antlers.
So Dart and Dr. Greenbank are going to go to the Four Seasons. So you're not super far from the Four Seasons. So are you? So you guys are going to take Ronnie's car then. Who's driving?
Probably me.
Okay. The roads, like I said before, not bad anymore. It's, you know, I think we, when we left off, we had had it at like 7 p.m. And so maybe it's 7:45 by the time that you would pull up to the Four Seasons. And one of the first things that you would notice is that the main door with like the with the very fancy glass that kind of makes up it, all of the glass is broken.
That's foreboding. Hey, Dr. D, I'm thinking this is gonna be a lot more in and out than we were originally planning.
Oh yeah. What does the what's the break pattern look like?
It looks like something smashed through it. It does not look like any of the magic that you've seen previously. Like, it looks like something large basically, you know, just shouldered its way through the glass. And, judging by the way that it's sort of, scattered inside of the, foyer in there, I mean, it goes in there pretty far. And as you're kind of peering into the doorway as well, you would see that, that there is very clearly a body slumped over the front desk.
Oh!
And a lot of blood.
I'd like to go over to the body, please.
Okay. You recognize her as one of the young ladies that you've seen working the desk. You don't know her name, and but like, she is mangled, like claw marks, looks like an animal, but a very large one.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, we gotta get our stuff and get going then. Come on, real quick, let's go.
Come on.
So, Dart, you start making your way down a couple of hallways, and both of you freeze as you hear something crash upstairs, and then you hear this loud scream, and there's more crashing, and something sounds like it's stomping almost, and then everything goes quiet again.
Okay. Let's go quietly, I think.
You start creeping your way down the hallway. You take a right and continue down a little bit further, and you reach this sort of T-intersection that brings you to the various wings, and you start heading down further to a place that's closer to the Palm Lounge, where the room that's closer to it, because they've had you guys all set up there since you spend the majority of your time working there. And so as you continue on, you again just hear more crashing and skittering, and you don't run into anyone.
I think Dart's just slowly making his way to his room.
Okay.
Yep, Dart. Yep.
So, Dart, you get to your room, and the first thing that you would notice is that it's cracked open just a little bit. Undamaged, but open a little bit.
I'm gonna pull out my switchblade and gently push open the door and try and peek in.
So you push the door open and it creaks as you open it, and you look inside and you see Marla. She's one of the cleaning ladies, and she just holds up one finger to her mouth, and you can see she's dripping in sweat, and she's pressed up against the wall on the other side of the room.
Oh, shit.
Readjust my grip on my knife and kind of like turn from her, and then kind of like jerk my head a little bit, like in the direction of the rest of the room, and raise an eyebrow at her.
She will point up, and you would assume that whatever she's been hearing is probably upstairs, but you also would assume that she probably hasn't moved from this room in quite some time.
Okay, then I'll make my way in and just look for my my suitcase, or my duffel bag, really. Grab that, and then whisper at her, come on, we're getting out of here.
All right, we are going to cut over to Ronnie and Elliot.
Seems like he got a nice family, Frosty.
Yes, yes, I suppose so.
Hey, how you doing through all this? I mean, everything we've been through, have you had time to process?
No, not quite. This is our first time being fully together.
You see headlights shine through the windows for a second, and then they shut off, and an engine shuts off, and a door closes. And then a second door closes.
And they got back mighty quick.
It couldn't have been them. It hasn't been long enough.
Maybe they forgot something.
I'm gonna go to the window and kind of peer out the curtains.
So, Ronnie, you drive a Chevy, right?
Whatever.
Okay, well, this is a Ford. And you see that there is a gentleman. He's walking his way up to the front door.
Hey, maybe we should, listen, Frosty, this might not be a good thing. Maybe it'd be better if you answered the door, but maybe it'd be better if I answered the door. We should answer together.
Just answer it.
Yeah.
He walks up onto the porch slowly, and then he knocks on the door three times very loudly.
I'll give it a moment and let it hang in the air.
He'll knock again.
On second knock, I'll crack it.
Hey, you guys got a phone I could use?
Who's asking?
Oh, just me. I'm Bobby. Bobby Turpin.
I don't know that name, and I know a lot of people around this town. You new in town?
Yeah, you could say that. I was just, you know, making my way up to the Four Seasons.
Hey, maybe I'll take the phone call and, I could, pass on a message for you.
Do you still just have the door open a crack?
A crack?
Okay, why don't you go ahead and roll strength for me?
Fuck.
I still have the gun, by the way.
Okay.
Barely. Pass.
So, you're, like, looking at him, and he immediately changes demeanor and then shoulders into the door incredibly hard, and it sort of opens up for a second, and you're able to slam it back shut, but you're not 100% what's going on, but he definitely just tried to force himself in here.
Obviously, Frosty, with the gun, I'm gonna be, like, wide-eyed, nodding my head to him.
You then hear a gunshot on the front porch.
Oh, shit, get it locked.
And you're not really sure where it went.
Yeah. Ronnie drops to the floor and scrambles backwards, looking for any holes in the door.
You hear the sound of glass shattering somewhere in the back of the house as well.
Frosty, I think we better make an exit.
Nora, Hamlet, now!
Nora goes over and rushes and grabs Hamlet up, and where are you guys going? Are you, gonna go out a window? What's the plan here?
Frosty, I need you to trust me here. This is gonna be a little unconventional, but you gotta follow my lead.
Nora, Hamlet, follow him. I'll be behind. I'm armed.
So Ronnie's gonna charge up the stairs to his bedroom and start pulling open drawers and grabbing several leather belts.
Okay.
And then he's gonna go to one of the hallway windows, and he opens it up and then starts flinging the belts over a long cable that he's run from this second floor all the way down into a wooded area just offside the house.
Okay. As you're going up the stairs and you get in and you start pulling these things out, you would hear that the back door has opened. Like you hear it creak open, and you would assume that he must have shattered the window and like opened up the door from the inside or something along those lines. But you also still hear somebody trying to bash their way in through the front door. And go ahead and give me a strength roll. Well, I guess who's going first?
Women and children first.
Okay. I will roll for Nora. She is gonna go first, and then we'll send Hamlet.
Krusty, hurry on up here! I'm gonna grab the backup 45 out of my dresser.
That's a fail. Nora gets like this belt over, and she gets maybe 5 or 6 feet off, and she doesn't expect the big dip that comes off of it, and so as like it dips hard, she immediately lets go, and you see her try and grasp for these bolts, but then she just falls down into the snow, and you hear this sickening crack as she hits the ground, and she starts to sort of try and stand up and then falls right back down to the ground.
Oh, fuck! Frosty!
I'm coming. They haven't made it up to the stairway yet.
You see somebody pokes their head around the wall, like that's next to the stairwell, coming from the back of the house where the kitchen is, and you don't recognize him.
All right, so I'm gonna turn around and run, like I'm running down the hallway, but then I'm going to double back and turn right back around with the gun. I want them to think that I'm fleeing instead of standing my ground, and then once they show their full body, I'm gonna take a shot.
Okay, so you start sprinting down the hallway, and you immediately hear feet charging up the stairwell, and then you turn around and level your rifle, and he is there in full view of you. You'd roll dexterity.
Not awful. And I'm going to use a luck point.
Okay.
And that wins.
Okay. So you level this rifle and you pull the trigger, and immediately his chest explodes in this shower of blood, and you see a bunch of the blood sprays on the wall behind him as well, and he sort of like staggers for a second and then immediately starts rolling backwards down the stairwell, and he twitches a few times at the bottom and then kind of stops moving, and you hear the voice from the outside go,
"Polly! Polly! Polly fucking... Bully!"
And then you hear a couple of gunshots happen, and you see some wood shrapnel sort of explode from the door, and not much else from there. What are you doing, Ronnie, right now? Because you just see Nora plummet to the ground, and you're almost positive she broke something, because there was a very loud crack.
Where the fuck is he? All right, kid. Listen, you gotta hang on tight, all right? I got this. I've done this before plenty of times. I know what I'm doing. We're gonna be fine. Just trust me. Hold on tight, all right? Here, grab around here.
Okay.
I'm gonna flip the belt over, and I would have practiced this before, so I'd like to request advantage if you make me roll strength.
Yeah, that's fine. You can have advantage.
And before I jump out the window, I say, "Frosty, your lady's on the first floor. She's hurt. You gotta go get her. I'm taking the kid." That is a... I'm glad I had advantage. That's a pass.
Okay. So you and Hamlet start speeding your way along this zip line, and you make your way down into the snow in the woods, and you safely touch down.
All right. So I'm going to stash the kid. I'm going to look for cover, and I'm going to try and get advantage on what the hell is going on.
All right. You don't see much back here, because I would imagine that this zip line goes to the woods in the back of the house instead of towards the road where you'd kind of be open and cover. And so there really isn't much to see out here right now. Like, I think that you can just barely make out Nora's form, and she's kind of writhing in the snow on the ground. But other than that, you're not really sure what's going on.
All right. This kind of defeats the purpose of my getaway, but I'm going to try and go get her.
Okay.
So once I get in the room, I'm going to, I heard him say that he took Hamlet, and I'm going to rush towards the window and look out really quick, but then turn around and I'm going to try to find maybe like this. Oh, I'm going to hide in the spot behind the door to the room. I want the guy to run in there and think that I went out the window.
Okay.
You hear the loud clomping of boots coming up the stairwell, and they slowly make their way through the hallway, and you watch as he sort of peeks his head into the doorway, looks around a little bit, sees the open window, and he slowly walks over. And
as soon as he gets like past where I can shut the door behind him, I'm raising the gun right to Skull, and I'm pulling the trigger.
Okay, go ahead and roll dexterity.
That is a pass.
All right. So Ronnie, as you're rushing over to get Nora and start dragging her, you hear a gunshot ring out, and just this flash of light in the window up in your bedroom.
Shit.
And Elliot, you paint this room with this man's brains, which I assume is Ronnie's room, and so I'm sure Ronnie's gonna be super happy about that.
Take that, you son of a bitch. All right, let's see what you got on you. I'm gonna take his weapon off of him and search his pockets and stuff.
He has a 38 revolver. In his wallet, he's got like $5 in cash. His ID will be an address in Chicago, and it'll say Robert Turpin.
How many rounds did he have for the revolver?
It looks like he had reloaded it once, and he has, let's say he has like 15 cartridges in his pocket.
Okay.
And then the 6 in the revolver. But he doesn't have any speed loaders like the cops did.
Okay. And, so I take that, and then $5.
Also, I realized that this entire time you would have been using the pistol because the rifle was lost in the river.
Yep.
I'm an idiot.
All right, and after I grab that stuff, I don't look like at the actual like license or anything yet, or the identification. I just put it all in my coat pocket and then run to the window. I think that's both of them. Nora, I'll be right there, and I'm going to run downstairs and go out the front door to get to her.
Ronnie is already there, and Nora's leg is facing the wrong direction and is at like a 90 degree angle.
Fuck.
Oh, Lord.
She's weeping openly, like she's writhing on the ground and just gritting her teeth.
No two ways about it, Frosty. We're going to have to carry her.
Yeah. I'm going to pick her up and sling her over my shoulders.
God damn it! God damn it!
Yeah, I think we'll kind of make our way towards the woods enough to call out for the kid, and then now that the guys are dead, I think we better get her back inside. This whole plan's been a terrible failure.
She grunts and spits every single step that you take, but you start making your way towards Hamlet, and with that we will make our way back to Dr. Greenbank and Dart. Dart, you're making your way through the hallway leading, and you've got Marla and Dr. Greenbank behind you, and you see one of the doors kind of like cracks itself open and then opens a lot more, and it's Pete. He's your bass player, and he goes, Holy shit, we need to get out of here, man.
Oh, you're telling me, man. We just came back to grab some of the stuff that we left in the rooms. Me and Dr. Greenbank, I thought you guys left already.
No. So here's the thing.
Well, Dave's dead. I'm pretty sure that Willie's dead. And well, Dave and Willie are definitely dead. I'm not sure about the others.
Okay, well, knowing them, if they got wind of anything, they're running.
Oh yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
we don't have time to look for them. You got your bag?
Oh yeah, and he'll sling his duffel over his shoulder.
All right.
What happened? What was the? Did you see anything?
It was big and sort of like whitish, and it moved really fast.
I think we saw that earlier too.
God damn it!
It's still here. I've heard it banging around up there still.
Of course, we don't have the gun.
No time for that now. Come on, let's go.
You start creeping your way down the hallway, and you hear this loud screeching noise for a second. And it's incredibly odd because it sounds as though, like, two voices are making it at once almost when it happens. And then you hear another one almost answer back the call. And then you hear a bunch of banging and crashing happening again upstairs. And you make your way into the foyer and everything gets silent again. And you notice that Marla is sort of looking up at the landing at the top of the dual staircase that's leads up to the second floor, and she's sort of backing up and trying to get her back up against the wall again, and she presses up against the wall, and seeing this, Pete also decides that this is a good idea, and so he like tries to wedge himself in there, but Pete's kind of a big guy, and he like knocks up against this pillar, and you watch as this plant begins to peter, and then it crashes to the ground. And then you hear more of that screeching. And Pete looks at both of you, and you hear it start crashing, and the sound is definitely getting closer. And he sort of looks at both of you and looks at the entrance, and he starts making his way towards it.
Dr. D, is there anything in your room that you actually need, or can we maybe...
We can get out of here right now. All of my equipment's in my car still.
Okay, yeah, let's go, let's go.
Yep.
So you start hustling your way out, and as you're sort of trying to carefully make your way through this broken door that is barely there, you notice that Marla is dragging behind you just a little bit, and you see this blur of white leap off of the landing up above, and it comes down hard upon her, and you see this gaunt face with these rows of jagged fangs, and there's blood just staining the entire front and neck of this creature, and it just screams at you for a second, just bearing its mouth and its fangs open so wide, it's otherworldly, and then it slams a claw into Marla, and her head immediately pops off, and it starts sprinting towards you guys, and Pete is scrambling to get over, and Dr. Greenbank and Dart, you're both already over it, and you start sprinting your way through the snow, and you see Pete is trying to get his way up, and immediately this creature is then on top of Pete, and it's tearing him limb from limb, and you watch as it lifts him up and starts lapping at the blood that is flowing off of him, and you get to the car, and you're fumbling with the keys, and you're trying to get it open, and you hear this thing, and it's coming, and it's still coming, and then you finally get the fucking car keys into the fucking door, and you open it up, and you start up the car, and you immediately start making your way towards the highway, and it's still on you, and it's still gaining at you, and you don't understand why, and then all of a sudden it just stops in the middle of the street, and you hear that loud call, and it starts heading back to the Four Seasons.
Dart is white knuckling the steering wheel, trying to keep his hands from shaking. Kind of slowly turns to Dorothy, still driving, but, you know, kind of, what were they doing there? Why were they there?
They were eating everything they could get their hands on.
But it's just... Four Seasons isn't anywhere close to... I mean... Why were they... there? It seemed like they were going after us before. And now they just... Seems like they knew that that's where we were gonna go.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did somehow.
We gotta get back to the others. We gotta get back to your basement.
I think that it doesn't take you long, because Dart, you would look down and realize that you're driving incredibly fast still at this point, and you'd kind of slow it down and realize that also it has allowed you to make really good time to Ronnie's house, but the first thing that you would notice is that there is another car in the driveway, and the front door is wide open. Dr. Greenbank and Dart, you would walk in and you would see that Nora is probably on a couch with her leg mangled. I don't even know what you guys would even try and do at this point. And there is a dead body on the floor at the base of the stairs. A lot of blood. And that's what you come back to. It's much like that that community gif when Donald Glover gets back to the room from getting pizza.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. What happened here?
As if... Once they walk in, I'd be probably quietly, like, reloading the gun that I shot and kind of just over there near where Nora is.
Greenbank, you got any medical training?
I mean, just what I picked up from Alfred, which isn't much. And I can certainly try, I guess. Oh, hon, did you fall out a window or something?
I think Nora just glares at you.
You hit the nail right on the biza. We need a splint or something.
Well, I'm sure I can do a splint.
I'm assuming it's fucking swollen to all hell like right now.
Yeah, no, like you, you're not positive that it's even a good idea for you to do anything about this. Like maybe just bringing her for immediate medical attention. Like that's your first instinct, Dr. Greenbank. But if you want to try and do some at-home stuff, that is up to you.
This is beyond my area of expertise. If it was a sprain or a twist, I could do it. But this is something that we need to go to a hospital for. Anything I do just risks doing further damage.
All right. Which of us can be seen in the hospital?
It's not like there's a warrant out for any of us.
Yeah, sure. I think you should go, Greenbank.
Ronnie, is there a warrant out for your arrest? I will, of course, but...
I can never be too sure. Things happen fast around this town.
Jesus, God. Okay. All right.
Whatever happens, we don't want it to lead back to us. So, if you have to take my car, you can. But I definitely don't think that I should be there. And also, make sure that the kid doesn't talk either. There's some gunfire and things we don't need going around town. Right, Elliot? The kid should stay with his mother.
What? Excuse me. Sorry. And you see him, like, just, like, looking at the revolver in his hand. He hasn't, like, put it down since, he shot that guy. And he puts it in, one of his pockets in his coat. I'm sorry, I was distracted.
I think that the kid should go to the hospital with the mother.
Yes, we should go. I'll go along, too.
Maybe you should hang back.
Why?
Frosty, you were the one that did the shooting, and I just don't want anything traced back to you. I don't really want you involved, and they start questioning what happened to her ankle and everything. It's better if you just get out of the picture. You know, the less people that go that know, the better. That's what I've come to find. Greenbank can take care of it.
Yep, God knows I've taken people to the hospital before.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. You know, I can still feel the ringing sensation in my wrist. firing it.
All right, you and me and Vandermeet can do some more investigating. Take your mind off of things.
I go over to Nora and kind of pull the hair away from her face. Dr. Greenbank is going to take you to the hospital and get you medical treatment. Are you going to be okay?
I'm going to do my best, okay?
Here, you might want to take this with you. And I hand her over the bottle of booze that we were drinking out of earlier. It's not going to do much, but won't hurt.
She'll take a long pull off of it and let out a long sigh and say,
"All right, go ahead and bring me to the car then."
Dorothy, and when she comes over, I'm going to extend out the other revolver that the other guy had. Handle first.
Oh, she did not handle radioactive material with the kind of gentleness that she handles this revolver with. She takes it just so, like...
It was my first time shooting recently. You'll get used to it if you need it.
Okay. All right. Eleanor?
All right, I'm going to lift you up on three. One, and then I just lift her up.
Ah! Damn it!
Trust me, it's better that way. I'm going to carry her to the car.
How old is the kid?
He's five.
He's like five.
Oh, okay. I'll be bundling him up in his coat, and I'm going to be cinching it tight in the front and doing up some of the buttons and say, pat him on the shoulder and say, "All right, kid, need you to be a man about this. Now, no talking, all right? Now, they may try to grill ya. You keep your lips zipped. Button that up. Stay with Greenbank. And take care of your mother. That's your job, and I know you can do it. Make your father proud." I'll give him another slap on the shoulder and then spin him around in place and kind of nudge him towards the door.
He'll kind of look at you funny and say, "Okay," and make his way after them. And Dr. Greenbank, you start driving towards the Marinette. I think that Hamlet falls asleep relatively quickly. He was still relatively tired when you guys woke him up before. Well, actually, you weren't part of that. My bad. Anyway. But Nora starts talking to you from the back seat, and she'll say, do you think they're going to be able to fix my leg?
I think that they're certainly going to be able to make it better than it is now. It depends on how bad you broke it, really. Also, I'm sorry if I seemed insensitive by the falling out a window comment. I did not expect that you actually fell out of a window.
Yeah, apparently, Ronnie has an escape plan. It's a real doozy.
Yeah, at this point, nothing about any of those gentlemen surprises me.
Yeah, including my husband. Of course, he shows back up, but, you know, can't be bothered with coming to the hospital because they have to investigate. Investigation. You know, that's typical Elliot, though.
I've noticed that seems to be a little bit of a pattern.
Families are fun when they're convenient, but, you know, not when you're trying to make your way through grad school, or not when professors take an interest in your theories, or when people start dying all around you.
Dorothy is quiet for a second, and she says, "Family is strange. From the perspective of a scientist and a professor, I can see why. And as a wife and a mother, you're entirely justified in your feelings. And it's plain, at least to me, that this is a conclusion that you did not want to come to."
I was kind of hoping that he would just stay gone, to be honest.
It's... Right now, all Dorothy can think about is, like, she's just, "I wish he would have stayed gone," and all she can think about is, well, at least yours came back, but she knows enough to not say that. So she's like, it's a little interesting that he chose this specific winter to come back. In how long? 5 years?
No, we were together for a short period when Hamlet was a baby.
Oh! Certainly not very fatherly to leave you alone with an infant. I'm real sorry you had to go through that, hon.
Yes. How far are we?
We're about halfway. It's, yeah, it shouldn't be that hard of a drive from here.
And we will go back to Ronnie and Elliot and Dart. What are y'all doing? And, Elliot, could you please give me a sanity check?
All right. So what if it matches? Is that a pass or a fail?
Tie goes to the runner, so that'll be a pass.
Okay.
So you'll take half damage from Nias. That'll be 2 sanity damage.
All right. Reach the halfway point. I'm at 10 now.
Yikes.
So I think now that the kid is out of the house, Dart's gonna walk over to the body and be like, well, you know, Elliot, I know you said you don't shoot, but that's a hell of a shot.
Yeah, I did my best to make the odds go in my favor. And I'm gonna kind of push him over with my foot, like, to where, like, he's laying, you know, on his back.
Yeah, you sure did a number on him. What, do you know why they were here?
Listen, I know some people that might want to come after me, and this ain't them. I don't know what's going on. And I'd be striking up a lucky.
One thing's for sure, they tried to force their way in. We had no choice but to defend ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. You know, it's...
That's easy for you to say. You get enough eyes on you over the years, and cops start turning a blind eye to things like evidence and rational thinking. Let's check the body upstairs. Maybe I'll know them. It all happened so fast, I didn't get a good look.
I'm going to reach into the pockets of this guy and get everything that I can from him.
The ID reads Paul O'Donnell. He's got $5 in his pocket as well. He has a .38 revolver with 20 cartridges in the pocket, and a Chicago address as well on the ID.
Well, if nothing else, good news is we have a couple more guns. Though I don't know if they're going to be as effective against the...
We're taking them.
Yeah, I'll hand that other gun to Dart.
Dart stops mid-sentence when he's saying against the other, and he just kind of goes, like, space-eyed for a second until you're, like, kind of bumping him with the gun to hand it to him. So, oh, yeah.
You want to take one of these, too? I hand him one of the speed loaders.
Oh, good, yeah, thanks.
And a handful of the rounds. I'm up to like 46 now, so I guess I'll hand you 20, the ones that came out of this guy's pocket.
Are we actually tracking ammo?
Yep.
Well, shit. How much does my 45 have?
I mean, you would probably have a box of shells somewhere here, so I mean, you could have as many as 100 if you wanted to.
I'll take 100.
You say this was a 38 revolver?
Correct, yep.
Ronnie begins marching upstairs.
Yeah, and Dartle kind of follow him. When we get into Ronnie's room to see the body, Dart kind of, you know, walks over and then just... Wait a second, is that fucking Bobby? What the f...
Bobby who?
Bobby Turpin. I'm surprised you don't know him, considering you talk to damn near everyone that comes into the Four Seasons. He's been to a couple of my shows I've seen. Decent guy, from what I knew at least.
I don't even think I would have recognized him before his face was rearranged.
And they tried to force their way in, and... did they shoot at you, or...?
There was definitely shooting. I don't know at whom. I assume it was us. They broke through the doors. Came charging after us.
This is wild.
You're telling me? I'll strike up my second cigarette.
So you knew him. What kind of business was this guy in?
Not too certain. I met him a couple of times. He made good, small talk, but I'd never asked about his business. Talked about music a little bit, jazz theory, smoked a little bit, drank a little bit with him.
One thing that's for sure, it's been a while. If anybody sent them, they're going to be bothered by the fact that they haven't gotten word back yet, so I'm thinking we should exit the premises here pretty soon.
So, Ronnie, this isn't your first safe house, correct?
It's the only safe house I got right now.
Well, what I'm saying is you've been moved around before.
Sure.
Is there a protocol for when something like this happens?
There's protocol for when things happen, but I don't know what this is. And I don't know what it's related to. That's the problem.
What I'm saying is, do we have to take care of this situation?
No. No, there's no time. If anything comes down to it, it was self-defense. One thing we can't let them find is the cop car in the garage. That's gonna have to go with us.
Yeah, I think we take the squad car to Dr. Greenbank's, call the hospital, let her know to just come to your place, to head back to her place, that is. Don't come back to your place. And, we can start to figure things out there, but I don't think that we should be staying around here too long. And, the Four Seasons isn't a place we can go back to, that's for sure.
You got your things, right?
I got my things. Not a whole lot left in them. That's gonna be helpful, though.
I don't understand.
Those things were there at Four Seasons.
Vandermeek, you're looking a little pale.
Yeah.
Your things were at the Four Seasons, and then?
No, those things were at the Four Seasons. They were tearing people apart.
Good God Almighty, San Antonio, Texas.
I know they got Pete. Before he went, he said Dave and Willie are gone. Not certain about Roberto. I didn't see him none. But we barely got out of there. So we gotta get to some place that's safe from them, I think.
Back to the sign. Frosty?
Yes. Before we leave, do you have a phone book?
Yeah, sure. Downstairs.
He's going to go downstairs, go to the phone book, and he's going to find Rick Wagoner. And once he does, he's going to tear the page out.
Okay. Yeah, the address is for his clinic that's in Pembine.
It doesn't have a home address?
It does not. It was a pretty big building, though. You wouldn't be surprised to learn that maybe he lives there, but you're not sure.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll drive the cop car.
So you guys are going to take Ronnie's coupe and the cop car to Dorothy's house? Or, no, Ronnie's coupe is gone. Dorothy's in that. So you're just taking the cop car back to Dorothy's house, correct?
Correct.
So, I think we should get rid of the cop car as soon as possible.
I don't think any of us are going to argue with that, but the question is how?
I mean, are we going to just walk? We're going to hoof it back to Greenbank's house? That's...
Well, I'm sure one of these gentlemen has the keys to that Ford outside.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I forgot about the Ford. All right. We take them both to a discreet location, and then we all Ford it out of there. The question is where to stash it. I know of a couple boat landings. And we might even be able to sink the thing.
Sorry, I'm not used to a place like this. But just on first glance, is the ice thick enough for the car to break through? Or should I say, is it not thick enough?
I don't know. I'm not from here. Vandermeek?
What if we take it toward the, you know, the river? I mean, it's thick enough ice to ski on, maybe, but it's not gonna hold up a car.
River. All right, we take it to the river.
I'll have to do. All right, I'll follow.
So you go and you drive out to one of the boat landings. It's not really that far from here because the river that makes up Moscano Island, which is where the Four Seasons is surrounded by the Menominee. And so you drive not too far, go down some back roads. They're definitely a little bit worse, so you have to kind of be a little bit careful about it. But eventually you reach the boat landing and you can just pick up a rock and put it down on the accelerator and let it fly into the water if you so choose.
Before we do that,
gonna do a quick look around the... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say I want to look around on the inside of the car and see if there's anything of value in it.
You guys have cleaned out the car for the most part at this point.
Dorothy's scrapbooks.
Oh, yeah, yep. There would be Dorothy's stuff, but other than that, like all of the stuff that belonged to the police officers, you've pretty much cleaned out. You could grab all of the flares and chains and things from the trunk.
I'm going to put the identification of those two gentlemen inside it.
Okay. And the engine revs up, and you put it into gear and back away, and this thing just starts tearing down, and it goes across the ice for a little while before finally it just breaks through, and you watch as it, the engine goes down in and it sort of begins to capsize like a boat almost, and the trunk of it stays in the air for, you know, 15-20 minutes before finally all of it goes under the ice and you can't even see the lights any longer.
I would just say that, like, probably after it doesn't sink in like maybe 3 to 5 minutes, I probably would have been like, this takes a lot longer than I expected it to. I think maybe we should just go.
Yeah, we probably should have rolled the windows down on it. That might have helped. But yeah, let's just get the hell out of here.
So long, Patty. You were one of the good ones.
You drive and it's not long before you make your way to Dr. Greenbank's house, and Dr. Greenbank is definitely not there. However, there is a vehicle parked there, and you can see that there are two... You're almost positive they're nuns. And they're standing on Dr. Greenbank's porch, and it looks like they have something. Like there's a device in the lady's hand, and she has this, like, wand almost, and she's, like, waving it around the house and stuff. And as your headlights sort of go on to them, they'll kind of both look up and look at you guys, and you'll see that they'll both wave.
What the hell?
Okay, wasn't expecting that. Dirt's gonna put a hand on the pistol in his coat pocket.
Now that the headlights are on them, they are definitely nuns. And the woman who's holding the device with the wand... Elliot, you would immediately know that it's a Geiger counter. And then you're really confused about something because you've never seen a Geiger counter that didn't have to be plugged in, like, to a wall. And she is very clearly holding this thing handheld.
Hello there. we've come to see Dr. Greenbank. Is she in?
So a doctor lives here. We have come seeking you out. Could I possibly maybe get a quick reading on all of you?
Oh, wait. Is that what I think it is? A Geiger counter?
Oh, yeah. You a man of science as well?
Yes, quite. Not quite my my field, but adjacent. Anyway, so, wow, that... Nope. Doesn't require to be plugged in, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, so... Not to toot our own horn, but it's pretty impressive. And she'll come close to you and, like, wait a second for permission, basically. And then she'll start wanding you, and you will click a little bit. Like, you're more radioactive than a human should be.
Hey, sorry to butt in, ma'am. Charlie Preston. I'm just curious, what brings you out to this particular place?
Oh, so we were hoping, well, we found the large, you know, signatures of, radioactivity, and, we're really hoping that you might know where Winston Wagner is. He might have told you that his name is, the Metatron or the Voice of God.
Okay, two things. Well, let's just say I'm caught off guard by that. How do you know about the Metatron?
We raised him.
Every night you hear a croon, a Russian lullaby. Just a little plaintive tune when baby starts to cry. Rock-a-bye, my baby. Somewhere there may be a land that's free for you and me and a Russian lullaby. Da 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 da, and a Russian lullaby.
I didn't know you had a gun.
I pulled it out of my drawer before I jumped off the window.
Oh, okay. Mr. I don't carry guns has a gun all of a sudden.
When did I say that?
When we were in the woods, like you were all afraid of the guns and stuff, and you wouldn't even hold one.
I don't remember that. Anyway.
Go back and re-listen, Brian.
Now I do. Got him.
Man, he's evolving. He doesn't even listen to what he says now.
The Devil's Antlers is a production by the Time to Die Podcast Network. We have other adventures too, and they're all available at timetodierpg.com. Our website also features ways you can support us, such as Patreon for pledging monthly and Ko-fi for one-time donations. The ukulele music is by Charlotte Pelgin. You can buy her fantastic album at charlottepelgin.com. It's available physically and digitally. Our players tonight were Tim DeMuse as the Game Master, Chris Riley as Elliot Halloway, Aubrey Gray as Dr. Greenbank, Eric Pat as Dart Vandermeek, and Brian Bridges as Ronnie Pinkerton. That's a me! Our social media links and all the links I've mentioned are in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again on the next episode of The Devil's Antlers.